You're with Mike Ryan on today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Now, it's a Wednesday, by the way, for those who have just woken up. Rise and shine. Always up at the crack of 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's not a bad lifestyle. But those nightclubs are raging for you, okay? We're raging for the people, by the way, because I've got to say something. Last night in Melbourne on Channel 7, okay, we have... I'll play this first of all. This is just reflecting on the insanity that still controls mainstream media.
Well, anger is building among parents and vaccinated teachers as the Victorian, Queensland and New South Wales governments start to allow unvaccinated people to return to work, abolishing the mandatory vaccination laws which were put in place to keep vulnerable members of the community safe. We'll see hundreds of workers return to school, childcare centres and aged care facilities. Now, the big worry for concerned parents and relatives is what will happen when previously banned staff members come through the front doors. In Victoria, that happens tomorrow, on Thursday in Queensland, and in New South Wales, it'll happen in the coming weeks. Well, joining me now to discuss is infectious diseases specialist Professor Robert Boy. Professor, morning to you. Look, how risky is this move, do you think, to allow unvaccinated staff around children and also the elderly?
Well, we've got a lot of reassurance from the fact that so many people are vaccinated, and for children who are at low risk anyway, the concern is minimal, except for those who are immunocompromised. And there we have to rely on the wisdom, and there's a lot of it, in principles, and they can keep unvaccinated teachers away from immunocompromised children. In nursing homes, I still think we should have everyone vaccinated because they're at such greater risk.
Absolutely. So you think that decision to allow the unvaccinated around the elderly and the vulnerable is a poor decision?
Well, it's a very difficult and a complex decision because elderly people need care and they can die for lack of it, but they also need care from people who are protected and won't pass on infection. And I think it's best to maintain that workers should be vaccinated against both flu and COVID so they don't pass it and cause the many outbreaks that we've seen already in nursing homes.
Yeah, well, what about schools? Schools will not disclose any teacher's vaccination status, and parents will not have the right to pull their children out of a class because a teacher is unvaccinated. Now, if a parent has a child that is immunocompromised, what's your advice? What should the school or parent do?
I think schools and parents can rely on the wisdom, the experience and the intelligence of school principals. They know what to do. They're doing it already. I've got a principal in my own family and I admire him to bits. These people can differentiate those that are immunocompromised, a small number, and make sure they remain protected.
Okay, that's, by the way, Matt Doran. Okay, Matt Doran, a bit about him in a second, and you can see where this is leading. First of all, we're dealing with morons, people of low IQ. Next, they'll be saying that you need to carry around a bottle of bloody holy water. Give me a break. Sprinkle on your neighbour. Protect yourself from his evil virus, his evil sins. Give me a break. You know, at the pub, what we'd say is that's bullshit. And punch him in the nose. Because let me tell you some facts before I get into... Matt Moron, Doran, that's his name, Matt, low IQ reporter, but fits in beautifully with mainstream media, moron. But let me tell you, according to the UK government, you have a 5 times greater chance of contracting COVID if you've got the jibby jibby jab jab, you bloody morons. The vaccine has been proven, and I use that word vaccine loosely, that lolly water or whatever it is that's going to alter your genes and your DNA and all that sort of shit. Now, I mean, let me tell you, it doesn't work. Duh. Hit yourself in the head a few times and say, it doesn't work. Oh, I'll get another booster because the other one didn't work. And how many have you had, sir? Oh, about 40. Looking like a pincushion, really. Anyway, so let me tell you, if you go to school and you have someone who hasn't been vaxxed, first of all, put your hand up and say, I want to have that person as my teacher. Because that person has some sort of rational reasoning implanted in their nonga. The others are just moronic sheep. And you have to agree with me. If this thing called a vaccine worked, why are you still getting, try not to laugh here, boosters after boosters? Really? Okay, back to Matt Doran. Matt Moron, we'll call him. Okay, Matt Moron from Channel 7 in Melbourne. Remember that guy? They've obviously put their top talent on. Channel 7 Australia has put their top talent on to bring you this breaking story. Don't let your children go near these anti-vaxxers. You'll catch common sense. Okay, but this Matty Doran, remember this guy?
Now I want to address something that's made headlines this week and something that I would like to apologise for. This is a story that has sparked a torrent of abuse and mockery from around the world, and if I'm being honest with you, the bulk of this savaging I deserve and I totally own. I flew to London to interview Adele, an unspeakable privilege and what was to be one of the highlights of my career. To Adele, I say, I'd never have knowingly disrespected you by deliberately not listening to your work. I am so sorry. I also apologise to Adele's Australian fans and to you, our viewers, who through my error have been denied this interview and the insight into her character.
You are a moron. You are a moron. Matt Moron, along with the other Channel 7 reporters throughout Australia, along with Channel 9, I don't know if you call them reporters at Channel 10, maybe, the communist agitators, or whatever they are at the ABC and SBS, why don't you grow some gonads and do some true journalism? And first of all, why don't you stop wasting our time and start with telling the truth?
Digging deeper on the facts.
It's a source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, we all know how hard it is to get information from mainstream media. Well, we do get information, but it's not true. We have an article today that says that people who have had COVID-19, the COVID-19 booster shot, that the vaccine developed in the original for the original Wuhan virus, are far less likely to die or be hospitalised with the Omicron variant. Yet, first of all, that truly, I mean, you're talking about disinformation and bloody lies. Well, there you are. It goes on. Our guests today are here to discuss real-world data that our governments have made extremely hard to obtain, which provides a radically different picture of vaccine efficacy. We already know COVID infections are at such a high level in our highly vaccinated countries. Roll up, get the vaccine, get COVID, five times greater, roll up. Now, there really is no longer any argument about the efficacy. There's none. Of course, we have these moronic so-called reporters in mainstream media. Look at the Australian. It used to be a great newspaper in Australia. Now it's all, and at least they print it on paper so you could use it for in the toilet, because that's all it's good for wiping your, you know what. It's a piece of crap paper, lies through the teeth. And look at the other shit that comes out with the other periodicals. They are liars. Anyway. The question now readily focuses on the long and short-term dangers about which mainstream media has nothing to say. Jerry Beck is an independent political and media consultant and on everywhere here. I'm sure he has shares in the business. He has decades of experience in studying and writing about globalisation and many other subjects like COVID-19. And Dr. Wilson Tsai has completed an analysis on New South Wales COVID deaths, infections, hospitalisations, ICU admissions, and a study being used in a case against the New South Wales government vaccine mandate. Now, Dr. Wilson Tsai has held senior university positions at ANU, UTS, and UNSW in physics, maths, financial, and economics for 15 years. Doesn't look a day over four. He has worked in financial regulation research at ASIC and APRA, where he was the principal researcher and more recently has focused his attention on COVID-19 epidemiology, providing expert advice to a law firm on legal challenges to vaccine mandates. First of all, Wilson and Jeremy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.
Hi.
Yeah,
hey, Mike.
Yeah, it's first of all, but to both of you, I mean, I just played you a grab from Channel 7 in Melbourne, who are saying that you should be scared of taking your children to school if the teachers haven't been vaccinated. Surely we can either take their license. Mate, can't the broadcasting authority remove the license off these moronic, lying, disinformation channels? And can't they just give it to someone who's going to tell the truth? Because they are lying through their teeth, aren't they?
Absolutely. The Australian Press Council is meant to oversee these sorts of matters for the media. I remember many, many years ago, actually it was back in the 1990s, contacting them over some articles of just complete nonsense on the subject of climate change. Nothing's changed on that subject. They're still spewing out nonsense. And now it's just straight out lies on COVID.
Yeah, I just got you, Wilson. Wilson, a bit like the ball in Tom Hanks' film, but much, much more intelligent, of course. Are you appalled, though? I mean, you're an intelligent bloke, and are you appalled at the absolute garbage that we see day in, day out on Australian media?
Oh, yes. The way I consider this issue of COVID is that I actually read the original papers, like, you know, I'm scientifically trained and I know how to read research papers. And what I find in reading a lot of medical research papers is that how quite often the standard is extremely low, right? Mm. Like, particularly the more top tier journals, the more they seem to be corrupted by whoever fund the research. Mm. Now, let me give you an example that you've just mentioned about the third dose being more effective at preventing infections. Now, this paper is a preprint submitted to The Lancet, a top-tier journal. Now, I don't know whether it's been published yet, but when I look through it, the first thing you notice is that it's funded by the New South Wales Ministry of Health, right? Now, there's nothing wrong with that, except that the New South Wales Ministry of Health has already come out in the media to say, get your third dose, right? So in other words, they've already committed to it, right? Now, this paper is really trying to prove that what the government has said is backed by science, right?
Mm.
But when you look through the paper, it's not science at all, right? Firstly, the data captured by a mob called Notifiable Condition Information System, right? Now, so the first thing is that, does this capture the true data, right? Now, we know that in a lot of such reporting system, there's a lot of inaccuracy because it's not compulsory or systematic. So that's the first point about the data, right? The second point is that they look at the period, 6-week period from the 1st of January 2020. Okay? Now, if you look at that period, that's just when the third jabs started, right? So that when you first jab people, right, it could take any number of period. You don't know when would the third jab take effect.
Mm.
Now, over that period, there was 2.8 million additional total new doses, of which 2 million were third dose, because you can get this data, okay? So you are looking at data that is in this state of flux. And secondly, there's no clear definition in their paper about exactly whether they understood how the data is in fact collected. When you say two dose when? It matters whether you just got two dose, Mm. 3 days before the end of the trial period or right from the beginning. There's a lot of those details, right? It's just missing in there. And worst of all, right? They adjusted the data through a thing called adjusted hazard ratio, right? Well, what is adjusted hazard ratio? Well, they don't tell you. They just say that it includes adjustment for age, sex, socioeconomic status, comorbidity.
Mm.
Now, my question is, how does socioeconomic status have to do with whether you are living or dead, right? I mean, so all this data adjustment, if you adjust the data, you can prove anything you like.
Mm.
That's what I say, right? Unless the adjustments are so clear that any person who wants to can go and reproduce the data from the primary and the unadjusted source, the adjusted source. So, so I would place absolutely no credibility on this paper whatsoever, its conclusion.
Yeah, Jeremy, now, Wilson. Jeremy, you're a data man. I mean, you love data. You have it for breakfast with your cereal, just about. I mean, it's pretty easy to portray something, as Wilson said, as the truth. But what you've done is you've re-engineered the whole thing to make it suit your way of thinking, or the point or the narrative that you are trying to make. So data itself can be abused and twisted, can't it?
That is for sure. It's called lies, damn lies, and statistics. and having a background in scientific areas, my qualifications are in mechanical engineering, and I've dealt with graphs and charts and so much data on Microsoft Excel sheets, my eyes are sort of glazing over half the time looking at the data. But you can play tricks with it. You can have a chart which you can stretch, if you like, to make it visually look more relevant. And if you want to make it look less relevant, you can squash it all up. You can put it in a logarithmic graph, which will change the sort of data from a straight line to a curve. You can do all sorts of things. If you have the bad intentions, you can really, I know governments can make things look scary when they're not really scary at all.
See,
what you're saying there is about data presentation.
Mm.
Okay, you can present the data to give a misleading impression, if you like. But what I'm saying is that the problem with this paper that I've just been notified is that they actually manipulate or tamper with the data to create a false conclusion. Right.
Mm.
Now, if you look at, I always try to use the raw data, you know, as little manipulation as possible. And moreover, in all the papers that I use in the data, anyone can go and, because I describe exact source, anyone can go and get that data and repeat what I've got. And they can go and they can go and present it in any different way they like, right? But the data is can be verified, can be replicated. That is a key important aspect of science. Anything else is rubbish, right? Mm. So if a reader cannot reproduce the data, right, however misleading it may be, because if you can go and get the original data, you can go and present it in some other way, right? So there's no way of someone deceiving you, right? Whereas with a paper like what we've been talking about, there's no way you can get the data. So how do I even verify that they have done the analysis correctly or anything like that?
That's
the key point.
It's a bit like you could say on planet X, it's made of cheese, and science says it's made of cheese, and you have to believe science or believe what you've been told, because unless you're an Elon Musk, I mean, you can't do that. So, look, Si and Wilson, I'm just thinking, now, Australia is a very highly vaccinated country. We've had more than 31,000 cases in the last 24 hours of the article. How does this compare with other countries?
In terms of casualty, Australia is not doing too badly, I mean, at this point in time. Now, don't forget that there's a lot more overseas. They started off with a lot more cases and deaths than Australia, because up until 2020, till the end of 2020, there was hardly any deaths, any cases compared to the rest of the world than, you know, in Australia. Now, it's when this country started to inject people with this COVID injection that cases and deaths starts to rise. That's what the data show very, very clearly, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more injection you give, you administer, the more cases, the more hospitalization, the more deaths there are. The data is absolutely clear. It is the reason why it is so reliable is that you're not, this data is not tampered, right? There's no adjustment, nothing, right? The data doesn't even rely on you defining who is vaccinated, who is unvaccinated, right?
Mm.
And in fact, the most official reports are almost fraudulent, because they can define unvaccinated people who've already got the jab. It's just that they say, well, it's not, they haven't have it long enough, right? Now, if you look at some of the reports on deaths from severe events, and in fact deaths associated with the vaccine, what you will find in overseas databases is that you are more likely to die on the first, second, third, fourth in the declining curve, right? So that the sooner after you are vaccinated, the more likely you're to die, right? Now, that's just what's reported, right? And I think that the reason for that is that there could be a bit of a bias, in the sense that, you know, if you had an injection today and tonight, you know, you suddenly die, right? So that is a very clear association, if you like, that it's the vaccine that might have something to do with your dying, right? Because it's within 24 hours. Within 2 days, also, 3 days, 4 days. So as time goes on, right, you are less able to associate the casualty with the vaccination. So that may be how the reporting system is biased. But the thing is, the fact that there are lots of people dying very soon after injection suggests causality, right? Okay, I mean, the official line is that, oh, that's a coincidence. You know, that person would die anyway, even though the person's running around and playing sport or running. You know, a lot of people sort of drop dead in the middle of a football match.
Well, they're calling it SADS.
It's just a coincidence.
Yeah, well, they're calling it SADS, sudden adult death syndrome. I mean, it's like, what do we think of a name for something that we know is a lie, but we'll make it the truth? And that's what it is, isn't it? It's just another name or another lie.
Well, look. It's like what you do with children when they ask a difficult question.
Mm.
You said you just give it a name, and then they're satisfied. Why did this person die? You know, it's just cause sudden adult death syndrome.
It's terrible. Not much chop if you're the one doing it.
Right. You know, when a kid asks the parents a question that they can't answer, they say, well, what's the reason for this?
Mm.
They don't know. They just say, oh, it's God.
Yeah, no.
Or whatever comes in handy. So there's an answer, and the kid goes away and sort of puzzles around. You know, why is the reason God always?
I know. But we have a great problem at the moment. We have a problem with the whole essence of this conversation gets back to probably the truth. And as Jack Nicholson said, maybe they can't handle the truth. And if you've been made to take a few jabs and you know that perhaps the outcome is not what you want to hear, then you can't handle the truth. Look, my guests for this hour, Jeremy Beck and Dr. Wilson Tsai. This is TNT Radio.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me.
I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
Well, it's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So many of your favorite libertarian celebrities are here at Freedom Fest. You not only get to hear them speak, you get to talk to them because our speakers are part of the action.
Freedom Fest is an amazing opportunity for freedom lovers from all over the world to meet and interact, strategize, and come up with ways to advance our principles both in the culture and within the political space.
Don't miss Freedom Fest,
the largest liberty event of the year,
July 13th to 16th at the Mirage in Las Vegas. For more information, go to freedomfest.com.
For the news and talk you can't hear anywhere else.
It gives you some awareness of what's really going on.
Where things are at, even around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
My guest is Jeremy Beck, a political hound extraordinaire and very precise in spelling, although I have won a few battles or pronunciations at least, and because I have the microphone, he can't disagree with me. And Dr. Wilson Tsai, who's more intelligent than Jeremy and I put together, which is probably not debatable either, because I was always told a still tongue and a wise head, so I better shut up, Wilson. Hey, tell us about your study. What are you trying to find? What are you trying to find from the data?
Well, the truth. I mean, put it simply, you know, what is going on, right? And what I find is that a lot of... See, I'm a scientifically trained, right? And therefore, I don't believe anything I'm told. I have to go and investigate, right? So it's this desire to investigate, which drives what I know and do. Mm-hmm. I mean, my actions, sometimes you may have to make a quick decision without, thinking too much about it. And often that's when I make mistakes. Right? Mm. So the more I think about something, you know, the better my decisions are, and governments make the decision first and find a reason for it later, which is not the way to go. That's why I think the less governments do, the better.
Do you think? I mean, because you mentioned there being a scientist, that you always question or you want to find out, you want to explore for yourself and not just be told. Yeah. To both you and Jeremy, first of all, you, Wilson, do you think the Australians have actually not got the COVID virus, but it's a low IQ virus, and that we don't want to ask questions? We are quite happy to believe what we're told. And that's part of the reason I would imagine that we're in this precarious position at the moment.
Yeah, well, I think the evidence speaks for itself. I mean, so many people are just unquestionably, following what they're told by the government. And mind you, it's the easiest way. I mean, thinking and research is hard work. I mean, most people are too preoccupied with their daily lives to even think too much about it. And for the last, several decades, things have been pretty good. I mean, in the sense that, stock market goes up, their house price goes up, and they seem to be doing fine, so why bother about doing anything else but, enjoy life and and trust in the government? I mean, the only reason why I went into government was that I was working in an industry where I thought there was a lot of things that was going wrong, right? And the government didn't seem to know anything about it. So I said, look, maybe if I go into the government, I can find out why they think differently from what I think is happening. and maybe if I'm right and they're wrong, I can help the government, right? And then I find out, you know, when you're inside government, it's very different to what you think it is. And 99%, well, maybe 95% of people who don't never experience government haven't got a clue that, you know, how government works. I mean, you know.
Jeremy, what do you think? Do you think that we've lost the plot a bit, we're a bit lazy? And, I understand what Wilson's saying, but surely with our health and with the emerging evidence, and it's been emerging for a long time, and being a trial, surely the Australian public or the Western, you know, civilization would have said, hang on, this doesn't, you know, one on one is not equaling two. It's still a trial. Do you think our ability to question what we're being told and to explore and find the answer is diminishing? And is that part of the virus that we're developing a low IQ? In fact, this virus must have been out for about 10 years.
Well, I agree that there really is a stupidity in the population, because the data is obvious. The evidence is there for anyone to see. You don't have to be a scientist to understand some of the realities. It's just plain in front of our face. It's just anecdotal for many people who don't have a scientific understanding. But it is psychological. You have someone who's taken the jab, they don't want to hear that it could be dangerous. It could give them long-term health problems. They don't want to know that. I know people who've taken the jabs and they believed in the jabs. I've spoken non-stop to them about all the dangers, and they've gone through all the arguments. They've heard everything, but they just emotionally block it out. They cannot stand to hear anything that goes against what they just stick their heels in, and no way, we cannot go against that. It's an emotional response. That's the point.
Yeah, my wife, I won't tell you where she works, but she, some of her workmates have had, and in fact, many of her workmates have had side effects, but they still think that the vaccine has helped them get through these side effects. That is quite irrational, isn't it, Wilson?
Well, that's called the placebo effect. And if you've got an adverse reaction, they call it nocebo effect. In other words, they explain all these things by, oh, it's all in the mind. So if you had a vaccine and you got injured, then it's all in your mind.
Hey, look, I'm just wondering. I'm just thinking in your mind, but we're getting back to the, you know, to the cold hard facts here. What do your stats tell us about the state of play, not only in New South Wales or, you know, other states, but in Australia generally?
Oh, the Australian data is, well, New South Wales data is actually very similar to the national data. You know, partly for a simple reason that New South Wales is, you know, 8.2 million people, which is more than a quarter of the national population, and as far as I could see from the from all the different charts that I've done for the New South Wales, the national data is very similar, right? In other words, I think Melbourne had more cases earlier, right? New South Wales caught up and gone past Victoria now. So if you look at the two main states, you know, the sum of those two accounts for more than 50% of the nation, right? And,
I'm just wondering, Wilson, I mean, and again, we're talking about cases here, but do we have a database for cases for, let's look at one, maybe a cold? No, we haven't got that, have we? What about the flu? Maybe there is some database there, but no one takes any notice. I mean, I have to say, having had COVID, and all my friends have had COVID, and some have had it quite seriously, but they're still here and they're all very healthy. Hydroxychloroquine is very good, and so is ivermectin. And I can tell you, it works. Okay, but I'm just thinking, though, 31,000 cases. How many cases do we have for maybe the flu? How many cases do we have for a cold? Do you think that the emphasis, Wilson, on cases is part of the fear campaign to drive us more towards getting that fourth, fifth, and sixth booster. Aren't we lucky?
Yeah. I haven't seen the actual cases for colds and flus, probably because they're not reported, right?
In other words,
there are no tests to say them, right?
Hmm.
But I have looked at the mortality data, right? The ABS published that data, right? Well, there are far more deaths from flu and pneumonia than there is COVID until maybe this year, maybe it's different. But the numbers are more like the average year.
Yeah.
I mustn't try to guess what I've read, what I've done. I've collected the data from ABS, and it's in the thousands. Okay, the respiratory diseases is in maybe 5,000 or 6,000, and the ones that are attributed to to pneumonia and flu, it's at least 3,000 or 4,000 per year.
Mm. Interesting. There were some figures out just recently, and it showed you that, and I'm just going to pull a figure, but it's pretty close to the number. There was just a titch under 3 million deaths from the flu in 2019 or whatever it was. And the next year, miraculous. I mean, it's just a magnificent feat of imaginary medicine that we actually had a 98% drop in the deaths of the flu, and just 2% was just fantastic. But unfortunately, though, it was terrible, because the same number of those that died from the flu one year, the next year, the same number died from COVID. And it was just amazing how that the flu was it just went away. But COVID just wiped out all these people. You'd have to say, as a guy that studies data and all sorts of stuff, you'd have to say that if one year you have just under 3 million deaths from the flu, that next year, basically, no one died from the flu and you have the same number dying of COVID.
Yeah,
you'd have to say there's a sort there's a manipulation of the data, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. I've looked at that. I've analysed this. In fact, I'm about to write a very equivalent paper to the New South Wales one, but focusing on mortality, right? Mm. Now, what happened in 2020 for a start, is that if you look at the flu and pneumonia data, they go up and down month by month. I'm looking at monthly data now, right? What happened was the data shows that in August, flu and pneumonia practically disappear in 2020, but relative to the 5-year average, right? In other words, the 5-year average of 2015 to 2019, if you take that average, there's a seasonal pattern of going up and down, right? Fluctuates month to month. But in 2020, it's quite different, because there's a hole in August, right? But if you add back the COVID death into the data, then the pattern reestablishes. Right? So in other words, it strongly suggests that what disappeared from flu and pneumonia in August 2020 was replaced by COVID death. So that strongly suggests there is a problem with identification. In other words, a lot of the flu and pneumonia cases were mislabeled as COVID. That is what the data would suggest. Now, further to that, I've looked at now we've got the 2021 all-cause mortality data published by the ABS, right? There, they actually give you a detailed analysis of all sorts of deaths from in a lot of detail, like respiratory diseases, how many die from identifiable flu viruses, pneumonia, and so on. So that data is available, and it goes down to even ones that they were not identified. So there were three or four items, which is pneumonia, unidentified virus, and then pneumonia or other unidentified ones. Now, what I found was that there was a sudden drop in those unidentified ones. So I add up the difference. In other words, it was a sudden drop, so I add up those numbers, and those numbers matches almost exactly with the COVID numbers. So in other words, there was something like 900 odd of those unidentified ones. So that disappeared from the data. But then when you add back the the COVID-19, there you have the data is matched. So what I suggest is that there were a lot of unidentified flus and pneumonia, which were then labeled COVID. If they were identified, then it's very easy for someone to say, well, call them COVID-19.
Yeah, it's just it's amazing though, isn't it? How they can manipulate, or how the whole thing was used to petrify the whole population basically of the world.
Yeah.
And it was just terrible, isn't it? It's just that these people should be held accountable.
Yeah. So there are these bits of information which suggest that you're right. It could well be just a variant of a flu or some coronavirus and just being called COVID.
It's terrible.
Look, and in fact, the data I've just shown in New South Wales shows that it is the vaccine that's causing more of the pandemic than any virus.
Mm. We'll talk more about that in just a second. This is TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
GOP Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel recently stated that the 2022 midterm elections may amount to a political realignment across partisan lines with respect to voting trends among Asian, Black and Hispanic American voters. She voiced this view on Breitbart News Daily's 28th of June show with host Alex Marlow. McDaniel's arguments are important as the Liberal establishment would like to paint the GOP as a party dominated by old white men who ignore the interests of ethnic minority constituencies. But as McDaniel explained, many ethnic minority voters are opposed to Democrat policies facilitating drug smuggling across the US-Mexico border, the government-driven increases in energy costs brought on in pursuit of environmental objectives, and transgender ideology targeting children. The GOP has rightly identified this weakness among the Democrats. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Mama, what does the chicken say? Dog. Cat. Giraffe.
Giraffe, really? Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Where progress is influenced by revolution and evolution. This is today's News Talk Radio.
TNT.
TNT.
Dr. Wilson Tsai and Jeremy Beck, my guest. Wilson, I'm just before we get into Jeremy, I'm just thinking something here. The vaccine rollout and the number of deaths go hand in hand, don't they?
Yes, that's right. They both, firstly, they both increase in time, right? By necessity, so the data always is correlated, right? But that's misleading if you just look at it that way. It is a curvature of the curve that is important. So if, like for example, if the injections were effective, what you will see is that it's still a curve, rising curve, but it bends over. It turns over into a plateau, right? Because what that means is that the more you vaccinate, the fewer is the rate of death. And then, if if as you vaccinate and the total death will taper off and become a plateau, because there's no more death as you vaccinate. That's called the concavity or the convexity of the curve. You know, I'm thinking about actually writing this up as a you have not seen this anywhere in the whole world in the literature at the moment, but I'm just talking about the possibility of using this as a objective measure of efficiency or efficacy in the real world context of, you know, vaccination or injections, right? So if you plot the in the last one on my chart, if you plot the number of vaccinations or injections on the horizontal axis, and then the number of deaths on the vertical axis, right? You will always see a rising line, but what is important about that line is that it's got to curl over, you know, curl down, curl. It will never turn down. It will flatten out, right? When it flattens out, means it's effective. But what you see in reality is that instead of flattening out that rising curve, it actually accelerates like an exponential function. I mean, you know, it's like a growth curve. So it shows it's not working. So I think the typical function that people understand in mathematics is the exponential function for constant growth. So if you see an exponential function, it means that it's not working, because the more you inject, the more death they are accelerating, right? But if you see the opposite, which is a logarithmic function, right? You know, it will rise, and then it curls over, flattens out into a plateau. That's when you show that. That's when you can see that the vaccinations are working, right? So it's a very simple, unadulterated piece of information, right? So there's very little you can manipulate or tamper the data with, to produce such a result. And that's a very important macro measure, objective measure of whether something's working or not.
Jeremy, I got to ask you this. Have you ever played Russian roulette?
I would not want to,
because I'm just thinking with at the moment what's happening with the boosters. You know, get the booster, roll up. It's all free, something for nothing, and you know, people do gravitate towards free things. They think they're going to win something, and here they're not going to win it, because like Russian roulette, Jeremy, the more boosters you take, or the more you get of this trial crap they're putting into your veins or into your body, the greater chance you have of becoming part of the data of those that have fallen off the perch after getting the vaccine. About right?
Oh, very true. And I can go into a bit more detail on that if we have time. Steve Kirsch put out a survey only just a few days ago, the 25th of June survey. And really, it's quite frightening to see the data. He only surveyed 500 people, and he plans to expand it to 5,000 people. But just with the 500, just a small sample, but it's enough to get some reliable data to get just a ballpark idea of how bad these vaccine injuries are. And he's put it down that 750,000 Americans have died from these jabs, versus 1 million who died from COVID. So nearly as many people have died from the jabs than from the virus, according to his survey. And it's very believable. When you hear anecdotally just the numbers of people you hear about having some severe reactions. You know, I've got people in my own family who've had some nasty adverse reactions. I know I just went to a restaurant a few weeks back, and the waitress said, yeah, so her son, he got some bad chest pains. And you hear this anecdotally all the time. So this survey from Steve Kirsch, it just goes through the numbers, and 6.6% rate of heart injury among those who took the jabs, 10 million Americans. 2.7% were so disabled that they can't work. This is just horrific. The numbers from this survey. I'd be very interested to see the survey of the 5,000. But this is quite incredible. That anyone who wants to have a look at it, it's at stevekirsch.substack.com.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can go through some more figures.
The data could actually underestimate the vaccine injuries because it's well known that it's underreported. So it would not surprise me if there are more deaths caused by the vaccine than caused by the COVID-19.
Yeah, and that was I was going to mention that to you. Just sorry for butting in here, Wilson. Just on that same subject and keeping the conversation going just with yourself here. Sorry, Jeremy. But I'm just thinking, okay, we looked at we talked about the number of people that died from the flu, and then the next year, basically, they attributed that to COVID. And then we have these great numbers of people that are falling off the perch or getting quite injured, hospitalised and so forth because of this stuff they're putting in your vein. It would seem then that what really, you know, and again, we can't prove it, Wilson, but what would seem to be the case is that if they had left it alone, did the early treatment for those that required to be looked after, you know, with other medicines instead of this stuff in the arm, that the number of deaths in relation to COVID and the vaccine would have been, I mean, the vaccine would have been high. COVID, though, would have been where the studies showed that it was down to about, you know, I think it was about 2% or something. So really, the severity of COVID has been overplayed and it has been basically switched for the deaths of the flu or pneumonia or something like that. And it really is, it would seem from what we're saying here, Wilson, that the whole thing has been a great overreaction to force people to get a serum in their bodies that has been hitting people on the head and creating such misery and deaths amongst the Western community.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
And that's terrible. That is terrible because what they did, and again, you said the whole thing's about the truth. What they did, they set out to deceive the populations, whether they knew that there was going to be a problem with overreactions or whatever, but they lied to Australians, Americans, the whole world on the severity of something that was nowhere near as severe as they made out to be. And in doing so, people have lost their lives, have been maimed and hospitalised, economies destroyed over something, looking at the data, something that was just nothing but BS and an abomination on humanity.
Yeah, I think your view is more probably true than the opposite.
Well, that's terrible. That is, I mean, I got to ask you both, Wilson, you study science and you're data and stuff, and Jeremy, you're great with figures and whatever. Let's look at the accountability in a couple of minutes. How can we make these people that sentence people to die and lied to the Australian public and the American public and the English public, European, how can we make them accountable? Because it was a great con job. It's like buying a car, getting onto the freeway and realising that the brakes aren't going to work. How do we hold them accountable?
I think we need to have trials. We must have some legal trials, like a Nuremberg trial, which I know this is going on behind the scenes. It's not officially amongst the major courts in the world, but there is a lot of traffic going back and forth on the internet. Anyone who's looked at the subject, but it must come out in the open. The mainstream media are still censoring it. They're still pushing the opposite, which is just insane right now. Those clips that you played earlier on today, Mike, it's just hideous to see what the lies. It's just crazy. They must be held accountable.
Wilson?
Well, I think the first thing is to stop all these things from happening because they are still pumping all this injection into as many people as they can, you know, including children, third shot, fourth shot, fifth shot, you know, that's got to be stopped, you know, for a start. And And then, you see, I know how government works. They have found a way of actually distributing, diffusing responsibility, right? Mm. So if you even when I'm taking this case against the New South Wales Health Ministry of Health, right, Brett Hazzard, what he would say is that I'm taking the expert advice. You know, that's what he would say.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's not his fault. If, mm. Right. So there are, and the world I've just discovered in the last, particularly thinking through the financial system fraud and now the pharmaceutical fraud.
Now, right? Wilson, we do have to stop.
It's a control fraud.
Yes, right? It is.
In other words, they organize the institution so that they can get away with a lot of these things.
Okay, I totally agree. We have to go. This is... Sorry, fellas. This is TNT Radio.